Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Now, in an ideal world, all children and young people should live lives that are happy, loving and caring. Unfortunately, we don't live in an ideal world, do we? And many children need help, practical support and care. One organisation that helps children and other young people is Action for Children. This morning I chatted with Emily Behan from the charity and I began by asking her to tell me more about the organisation and the work that they do to support children.
So Action for Children is a national charity, and our vision is to ensure that every child and young person in the country has a safe and happy childhood and the foundations that they need to thrive.
I find it extraordinary, you know, that so many children don't have that. What do you think lends itself to for children to be disadvantaged?
I mean, there are numbers of reasons. I think a huge one that we're seeing in this country, which people perhaps don't like to talk about, is poverty. And it is absolutely growing within our communities. We're seeing this pinch now with the cost of living increases, and people just aren't coping with it. And it's a real struggle for any parents and guardians who have children and families to kind of support as well.
So how long has Action for Children been running?
So currently in our name as Action for Children, we actually were renamed in 2008. Before that, many of your listeners might have heard of us as NCH, or the National Children's Home.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been going for a very long time. In fact, we had our 150-year anniversary in 2019.
Gosh, so a tremendous legacy of good work there.
Yeah, absolutely. And a number of kind of supporters and different kind of partners that we work with up and down the country that we've built those relationships for a really long time now.
Now, you're connected to the Methodist Church as well, aren't you? Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's right. So actually, way back in 1869, it was a Methodist minister, Reverend Thomas Bowman Stevenson, who actually used to talk to some of the kind of homeless children on the street and support them. And he actually started our very first home in very close to London Waterloo Station. And it's his faith and kind of personal values that still guide us today. And we work very closely with Methodist churches and districts kind of to raise money and awareness of the vital work we do.
What support do you get from the Methodist Church?
Oh, huge support. So you can imagine, you know, these are people who've supported us for a long time, from everything from, you know, coffee mornings. We have Action for Children Sunday, which is our anniversary coming up on the 10th of July. Where people will kind of provide worship and prayers for us, as well as kind of collecting kind of funds for us on those days and throughout the year.
Now, of course, it's not just the Methodist Church you partner with. You partner with lots of other agencies. Talk me through some of those.
Yeah, well, we do reach out to other faith groups as well. And as well as that, we work very closely with local authorities. We partner as well with other charities. So I think it's very important for us all to talk to each other about best practice and kind of the ways forward that we can help our children and young people. And then we have obviously the general public, lots of companies, foundations, individuals and volunteers who just give their support to us tirelessly, and we just couldn't do it without them.
For anybody who's unfamiliar with Action for Children, how would you describe your mission?
So our mission is to protect and support children and young people, and we do that in three ways. So we provide practical and emotional care and support. We ensure that their voices are heard, and we campaign to bring lasting improvements to their lives.
So it's as simple as that?
Absolutely that, yeah.
And for children who may have additional needs, or maybe perhaps neurodiverse, for example, what extra measures do you have in place to support them and their families too?
I mean, up and down the country, we have services in every community. You know, with children with special educational needs, we have services to support those. And just to ensure that you know, parents and guardians have all those tools that they need to be able to prevent them from harm and any difficulties that may crop up. And they do crop up for every family, you know, wherever they are. And, you know, we aim to be there. One of our services is our Parent Talk phone line, which is almost like a peer-to-peer service. And people can call whenever they want with any struggles that they may be going through. And it happens to everyone.
Do you have any idea how many children and young people that you help in the UK every year? Because it must go into, I don't know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, perhaps?
It goes into hundreds of thousands. Mm. So last year alone, we helped over 604,881 children and young people.
Good Lord.
I know. And we've just had an update from our senior leadership team that this number has grown by over 70,000 in the last year.
What do you think can be done to support children more on a UK-wide basis, not necessarily regional? Because, you know, is it underfunding through governments? Are local authorities not pulling their weight and getting their act together? In your experience, what do you think? It wouldn't be a quick fix, clearly, but, you know, where should we be taking this?
I mean, there are a number of ways. Obviously, it is very complex. The government is stretched at the moment. We you know, have teams, our policy team and campaigns, they try and talk to government regularly and talk about making changes. You can write to your local MPs. You can donate to us as well. There are ways that you can be more vocal in kind of changing society. And one of those is we currently on our website have a letter to Parliament about talking about the cost of living crisis and putting it on the agenda.
And that must be, I mean, everybody's feeling the pinch with that at the moment, but certainly for families who are disadvantaged, then, you know, unfortunately the children seem to lose out, don't they? They don't have new school uniform, they may not have food, things that you and I and other people take for granted.
Absolutely. I mean, for children, we expect them to be out enjoying their lives, to be kind of playing with toys, playing with friends, and not having to make those decisions or struggle with kind of not having heating in their house or, you know, choosing between what meals the family eats. And yes, certainly things like school uniform, you know, they shouldn't be a luxury. And many families are struggling with these simple things.
Now, you mentioned a second ago that people can donate to. You're a charity, aren't you? So broadly, how are you funded?
Yes, we are. I mean, the majority of our income comes from our charitable activities throughout the year. So we have a number of campaigns and events that we hold. And then from hugely generous donations and legacies from our supporters, we are often successful in receiving government and grants from kind of private foundations as well, but we can never rely on this. So it really the generous donations that we receive from the public every year.
Can you give me any examples of the fundraising activities that you do undertake?
We have kind of big events. So at Christmas, we have a wonderful virtual gifting campaign called Secret Santa, where we work with companies and the local and national supporter base, kind of providing those things that we've just talked about, actually, for families that really need it the most. We have a number of events as well throughout the year that we are smaller, that we offer out for people to support. And one of those is coming up in October. And I'd love to talk to you about that one.
Yes. What's that all about?
So it's called Boycott Your Bed.
Oh, yes.
Previously it was known as Bite Night, and it was founded by a fantastic loyal supporter called Ken Deeks, who's our advocate, and it's now been going since 1994. And since the pandemic, we had to transition it into an event that was able to be virtual, and thus Boycott Your Bed was born.
Excellent. Now, do you know, there's something I learned last year, and I was quite horrified talking about beds, where I watched an interview on BBC Breakfast one morning where they interviewed a head teacher of a school up in Yorkshire. And she found that one of her pupils was less responsive one day in class than normal. And this child normally is, you know, is pretty good. And when talking to the child afterwards, the teacher established that the child hadn't had a very good night's sleep. And after probing a little bit more, the child hadn't got a bed to sleep in. And the child slept on the lounge floor in a flea infested cushion next to a sibling without any suitable bed linen. And this led to the phrase bed poverty. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, unfortunately, that is a huge problem. And, you know, as we say, you know, for the charity, you know, we want children to have the foundations that they need to thrive. And that is a nice, comfortable, clean, warm bed. It's the food in their tummies. It's all of those things that make them bright and make their star shine, which, you know, this is something that we're really, really trying to push right now. That, you know, no child should go without these really vital things.
And of course, a good night's sleep for anybody, but certainly for children, is crucial to their learning.
Of course, yeah. You know, their cognitive and mental development. You know, we want the adults of tomorrow to be thriving within our country and making that difference in the world and just being happy. And, you know, without those things, that, you know, they're unable to be. And that's why we exist as a charity.
Tell me about the help and support that's available here in the Black Country.
So we have a number of services. One of them is Family Partners in West Bromwich. It's an intensive support service which helps families to make positive changes, overcome difficulties, and prevent children's needs from being neglected. Mm-hmm. So that's one service. We have Sandwell IASS, which is the Information, Advice, and Support Service. And this is mainly for parents of children with special educational needs and for young people with additional needs that need assessing. And as well as that, you know, slightly wider in the region, we have a huge adoption and permanency service, which recruits adopters and foster families for vulnerable children. And also Birmingham Community Children's Centre, which provides parenting support and early years education. So lots going on in the area.
Clearly. And I mean, we've talked about this earlier on. It says on your website that you amplify the voices of children and young people and work to bring lasting change to their lives. That must be quite challenging. How do you go about doing that? And of course, with when we had the height of the COVID pandemic, that must have put the scuppers on a lot of things.
Yeah. I mean, this is it. You know, there are children up and down the country and in some areas that, you know, that don't have a voice, that we don't want to be hidden. We want to find them and we want to help them. And as a charity, we are there to help them to get their voices heard. So we aim not just to listen, but to act when our children and young people need us. So, for instance, last Wednesday, Action for Children, in partnership with five other children's charities, led over 100 care-experienced young children to Westminster to call for ministers and MPs to make changes in the care system, which is the biggest lobby of care-experienced young people Parliament has ever seen.
You see, that's an interesting thing you say that, because, I mean, I know somebody who is 22 now, but they have been a carer for their mother since they were at the age of five.
Right.
I find that, again, very, very extraordinary. But there's so many children at a young age are carers for a parent or an older person or a sibling. And again, that's where your support comes in, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah. I mean, we have a number of services for young carers. And the idea is that, you know, they can step away from that situation where you're the person that has the responsibilities, that, you know, things that we as children would never have had to experience, like having to pay bills on time or cook the main meal of the day, you know, things that they absolutely should be enjoying their childhood and going out and playing and enjoying kind of being themselves and expressing themselves. So our services, some of those, you know, in different areas, help to provide that for children so they can step away from that situation and just enjoy being themselves and making friends.
Now, obviously, you know, you've got your website. We'll go through your website and contact details in a moment. But I take it, you know, if a child or young person needs your help, they can come to you directly. They don't have to go through an adult or a partnership agency, do they?
Not necessarily, no. There are ways that they can kind of approach us. There also are ways that, you know, we can identify when we think there is someone struggling. So we mentioned previously about support workers that exist in schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to highlight, you know, maybe if a child is not as happy or bright as they had been previously, and just to kind of see whether they need some extra support, and that's when kind of we work in tandem with local authorities to be able to get them the support that they need.
With the charity's overall work, what would you say contributes to the key challenges that the charity faces on a day-to-day basis? The pandemic won't have helped. There will be underfunding in local authorities, as we've been saying. But, you know, it's very clearly a rewarding role for everybody that's involved. But, it must challenge you emotionally, physically and mentally, I guess.
Yes, it does. I mean, with the pandemic itself, I think many charities are and have struggled and have been trying to transition kind of a lot of their kind of in-person events, you know, because that's a huge part of what we do, you know, in terms of fundraising and also just raising awareness across the country, you know, having those people, you know, running a marathon for us or, you know, putting on an afternoon tea. All of these people kind of help to kind of share the message about what we're doing. So, yeah, we've definitely seen a struggle, but I think there are ways that, you know, we've got a fantastic team of events organisers and fundraisers who have helped us with certain things to kind of come out of that in different ways. And we're starting to see some real successes again. I think as well, there are lots of things in, our current kind of socioeconomic climate that are, you know, are really affecting everyone, obviously, with the Ukraine crisis and seeing kind of the number of refugees that are currently displaced. You know, these all have huge effects, and at some point in the near future, we're going to start seeing some of those refugees, and hopefully they will be accessing the services that we provide as well, because that's what they're there for.
Talk me through what's coming up for Action for Children this year. Generally, if you've got any big projects planned, or obviously your fundraising is ongoing and you've got your events that you talked about earlier on, but is there anything that we can get involved with, or we should know about, or saw successes?
Yeah, well, I mean, Boycott Your Bed is definitely the one coming up. So it's we have 5 live events going on around the country for our corporate supporters. But this October, we're asking friends, families, individuals to give up one night's sleep to raise vital funds to help support vulnerable children in the UK. It's being hosted on Facebook by our wonderful product development team on Friday, the 7th of October. But you can take part whenever you like. And it's really like it's a simple thing to do. Get your friends and family involved. Have a great time and make some money in the process.
And how can we find out more information, Emily?
So it's going to go live on our website, and I'm literally just getting the details now because it's been sent through to me. So you'll be able to log in to www.actionforchildren.uk/stay-up, and that's where you can sign up and take part in any of the activities we've got going on in October.
Lovely. And if we need to ring you, do you have a telephone number?
Yeah, we do. So, I mean, on our website, obviously we're a huge charity, so there are a number of ways you can get involved. On our website, you have each area has got a local fundraiser, and you can find their details and get involved. So if you want to kind of take part that way, you can, and you can access a number of our services as well, kind of that way. But I would say the first point port of call would be the website, and then all of our phone numbers are accessed there as well.
Lovely. Give your website a mention, Emily, if you will.
Oh, yes. So it's www.actionforchildren.org.uk.
Emily Bean from Action for Children, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode.
You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.